From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
California lawmakers created a new statute in 2018 preventing public employers from disparaging unions. The statute was designed to undercut the 2018 Supreme Court Janus decision, which gave public employees an opt-out right from paying any union dues. Now, seven elected officials in California are suing the California Public Employment Relations Board for violating their First Amendment rights of free speech. Well, Pacific Justice Institute will provide free legal help to any employees who, as a matter of conscience, seek to opt out from paying union dues.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice fills the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of bells. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
In your soul.
It does.
Good morning, Jefferson. Good morning, Terry. How you doing?
Good, Wynn. How you doing? Hey, Ashley. Good. How you doing over there?
Hi. Did you guys sneak some zucchini on somebody's porch yesterday?
No.
That was the national holiday that everyone was supposed to be celebrating.
Oh.
Zucchini sneakers, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sneak some Every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
In December.
Yeah.
But in August, it's two steaks, medium rare, with eggs and two Bloody Marys.
I'd also like to order a medium rare. I mean, ribeye if you got it.
There you go.
Yeah, thanks, Carl, for treating us to that.
As we're all dreaming.
Anyway, we are here at KCNR. 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, we are streaming
live.
Worldwide.
You betcha.
Podcasted and archived.
Yeah, and you can reach us at 605-4567.
Yes, that's 605-4567. What was that number again, Ashley?
605-4567.
And we'll take your call if we feel like talking to you. Just kidding.
On Tuesday, August the 11th, very important, we are having a reopened Shasta Town Hall. Basically, it's the Board of Supervisors meeting. It's taken 10 years for them to finally decide they were going to have a meeting at 6 p.m. That's at 1450 Court Street. We've been asking for this for years. This is the first Board of Supervisor meeting to be held in the evening. So come and speak and come and support one another and speak your mind. I believe we need to reopen Shasta County. What do you think, my good friend?
Absolutely. And do you know what? The kids, it would be great to hear from the high school kids or, you know, just kids in general about why they would want it opened up, you know, for their schools and so forth. It'd be nice to hear from them. They're the victims of all of this. We should hear from the kids.
Yeah, that memory of graduating high school is gone.
Yeah.
The proms are gone. Everything is gone. All those memories that a lot of people cherish through their lives are gone.
Yeah, I had a senior graduate this year. You know, we went out and did it in a parking lot. It was actually that part of the whole experience was probably better than it would have been at graduation, sitting on those aluminum bleachers. However, you know, the kids were funneled like cattle, and you know it. You know, they were supposed to not have masks on, or supposed to be wearing masks and so forth. So, it was crazy.
Well, we have a special guest on with us this morning, a very, very good friend, a brother,
special,
exceptional person, yes, and attorney Gary Zerman. Gary, how are you, brother?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm fine.
Gary is one of our attorneys on the CFR court case to get fair representation and adequate representation for all people in California.
Any kind of representation. For grasping at straws.
For the people of California. So, Gary, tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I've been an attorney for about 35 years. I grew up in Sarasota, Florida. Went into the United States Air Force. I was a security policeman. I spent two winters in Minot, North Dakota, then got transferred to Saigon, Vietnam for about 4 or 5 months, and then there was a big reduction in force. We all were moved over to Thailand and spent about a year over there. Then I came back to the States and was discharged from Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska, SAC headquarters. Then I went back to college and ended up coming out to California to go to law school, Southwestern University School of Law here in Los Angeles, where I'm at, outside of Los Angeles, and then began practicing law when I got my ticket. And I worked in insurance defense and did major automotive product liability cases, represented the government in some tort cases, personal injury cases, defending the government side of that. Then I got into plaintiff's legal malpractice, and then I got my real legal education and my head handed to me at the same time. It was kind of a wake-up call as to how the law really is meted out. And then I've got into doing legal and government reform. Also in there, I did a stint as a deputy city attorney for the city of Hawthorne at the airport courthouse. It's called the LAX courthouse. And there I worked primarily on criminal matters, did the criminal calendar, and tried a few cases out there. Then when I got into legal reform and with that legal malpractice case I had several injustices happen that got me to take a different look at the law, and found out that a lot of the judges, they have way too much power, they have too much discretion, and we discovered really in depth the doctrine of absolute judicial immunity. And ultimately, the judiciary is the gatekeeper, the final backstop, but yet they gave themselves absolute judicial immunity. And in researching that, you find out it's not in the Constitution, and then it came from the judges themselves that would therefore violate the doctrine of separation of powers. And that's one of the problems with our government. And then with our CFR case, we end up going to court, and the judges preside over these cases. And what happened to us is our case has been going on for quite a while, but we never got out of the starting blocks. We never got to put on our case. We never got to have a trial. These cases that we brought, the representation case, involves apportionment, and those type of cases are supposed to have a three-judge trial court panel because they're so important. And initially, our judge, Judge Mueller, gave us a three-judge panel, and then our opponent, Secretary of State for California, represented by the California Attorney General, brought a motion to reconsider, and they had no new facts or no new law, and the court then pulled back our three-judge court, and we never got out of the blocks, and yet we spent a lot of money. And the court docket is full of pleadings and stuff, but we never got a chance to put on our case. And just recently, in the last couple days, a case came down called U.S. versus Bundy, and that's the case over in Nevada with the cattle ranchers. And the Ninth Circuit just affirmed the trial court's dismissal of that case due to government misconduct, withholding evidence, Brady material. There's a case called Brady versus Maryland, and it's a Supreme Court case that imposes obligations on the government attorneys, the prosecutors. That's both the Department of Justice and the federal system, and the state cases would be the state's attorneys, to turn over all evidence of inculpatory conduct, which is evidence of guilt, and exculpatory conduct, evidence of innocence. And continually the government's caught not doing that, and so the system then turns out not to be fair. One of the attorneys on our team, former Justice of the Ninth Circuit, Alex Kaczynski, wrote a really good defense in a case called U.S. versus Olson, and he said there's an epidemic of Brady violations abroad in the land, and only the judges can do something about it, and they failed to do that. Another case that a lot of people should be familiar with is U.S. versus Flynn, and that's General Flynn, and it turns out there again the government withheld, you know, much of this exculpatory conduct, and in fact he was targeted, entrapped, and framed there.
You know,
more evidence is coming out, and so liberty and truth require constant vigilance.
Yes,
and one of the ways we were supposed to have it is through representation. I mean, the first three words of the Constitution, the preamble, start out "We the people,"
right?
And that's about us. We're supposed to be sovereign. Means that we the people are in charge and government's our servant, but things like this doctrine of absolute judicial immunity end up inverting the system. And you find out real quickly that if you don't have this constant vigilance, government starts encroaching upon the Constitution and our liberties.
Gary?
Yeah.
We've got to go off to a break, but hold that thought.
Sure.
And what you were saying was just that last...
Spot on.
Yeah, spot on.
Spot on.
You know, I want you to please elaborate on that after the break. We'll have plenty of time. We'll break again at 9:30, just so you know, while you're watching your clock. But
sure.
We're going to break right now so we can come back with Gary Zerman, a patriot, a statesman who knows the Constitution and sends me the best emails in the world. Thank you, brother.
Ditto.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
We believe America is the home of the brave. What we got is earned by working it and handed out for free. We stand for the flag and pledge our allegiance for the last of a dying breed. Last of a dying breed.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
are back. Yes, we are. We're here with attorney Gary Zerman. And Gary, just great stuff. You know how you were talking about the violation of rights? Well, actually, there was a violation of rights as far as Bundy goes. It even goes further than the fact that, he was thrown into isolation. There was a lot of things. Is there any recourse that he has on that? And then I want you to get back to what you were talking about.
Yeah, there's a possible civil suit that he can bring for violation of his rights. And I imagine they will bring that. We were talking before that, you know, government's supposed to be our servant, and real quickly they come in and start encroaching on the Constitution, chipping it away, and of course that ends up in the courts and through some of their decisions, and the judges haven't been the best gatekeepers. But government comes in and gives itself privileges, immunities, and exempts itself from the law, again inverting the system.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the remedies or checks was supposed to be that we are a representative republic as opposed to a democracy, because a democracy can boil down to the majority wins. Being a representative republic, there's certain things the majority can't do. You have these God-given rights that can't be taken away from you. If we were just a pure democracy, majority rules, we could bring back slavery. But now that's prevented because we're a representative republic, and there's certain things that government can't take away from you as long as we, the people, the three branches government, and particularly the judiciary, stand up to that. But sometimes they don't. And one is representation. In the Constitution, the federal, it starts out one rep for every 30,000 people, and that kept a good ratio and a balance where the people could ride herd over their representatives, and if they didn't like them, they could vote them out the next election for the House every 2 years, the Senate every 6 years. But what's happened in the Constitution, it says the legislature shall determine what the legislature is. And that's generally a good concept, but they've gone way overboard. And in particular, here in California, initially, both the federal government and California started out that as the population increased, we would add representatives, keeping those ratios one for 30,000. Or it was fewer than that initially in California, but we kept those ratios, and then the proper balance and representative was organic. It came out of we the people. But what's happened is we stopped increasing the legislature. For example, in California, the last time we added a member to the legislature here in the state of California was in 1862. We were less than 500,000 people as the population of the state. And then at that time when they fixed it, it was 80 assembly members and 40 state senators. In fact, later in 1879, they put it into the Constitution. And so they've capped the legislature, and the legislature is really important. It was placed first in the Constitution because it's closest to the people. That's where the people speak, the will of the people comes. And again, if we don't like our legislatures, we were supposed to be able to vote them out. But when you cap the legislature, what you're doing is cutting off the power of the people. And so there's a Federalist paper that says that the executive branch and the judiciary will be few in number and distant from the people, whereas the legislature will be manied, varied, and amongst the people. So that's where our voice is, through the legislature, and why the legislature is first in the Constitution. But what's happened is when you cap the legislature, you're cutting off the power of the people, and the legislature hasn't grown, so we've gone from a representative republic, and now we have an oligarchy.
Yes.
Another critical thing that happens is when you cap the legislature, what happens is the other two branches grow, and they've grown in leaps and bounds. In fact, they've leapfrogged over the legislature, And so too many decisions are made in the executive branch and made in the judiciary and not in the legislature, so it's not the voice or the will of the people. And the same situation exists in the federal system. In 1911, we capped the House of Representatives at 435. We were about 95 million people, so we've added about 230 million people with no more representatives.
Wow.
And the consequence of that is that the districts just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger in population, but our representatives don't increase. So, for example, in the federal system, we have one representative for 770,000 people today instead of the one for 30,000. And in California, our assembly districts have grown to 500,000 people and our Senate districts to a million.
Wow.
And those are just simply too large to be a representative government and for the will of the people to be heard.
Well, Gary, along those lines, I have a question for you. We have a chat room on our radio show, and people will write in their questions and comments and so forth. And one of them was one of the callers wants to know, out of the 40 million Californians, how many signatures would it take to petition AG Barr to get Newsom for a sedition? So it's along those lines there. Is there a magic number, or could it just be one? How does this work, you know, to effectively talk to or communicate with the Attorney General of the United States to do what we would hope they would do?
Well, that's kind of a broad question.
Right.
And you're mixing state issues with federal constitutions. And one of the problems is that too many petitions go unanswered. I mean, our government simply is not representative or responsive to us. Things have gotten too large. I mean, if you'll recall, one of the founding principles of our Constitution was limited government. The founding fathers had studied governments all around the world and were quite knowledgeable, and they thought that power almost always is abused. Hence, they said limit government, and we're supposed to have a constitution of limited and express powers. And they were right, because even with our great constitution with three co-equal independent branches of government and the system of checks and balances, it's gotten largely away from us because the Constitution is interpreted by men, and a lot of times the passions and pressures of greed and power, people don't do the right thing.
You know, I think that part of that question is apples and oranges, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the question that was asked, it's a thing where you're looking at a petition. No, what would happen is we have to find the governor guilty on a federal crime. For example, Title 8, Code Section 1324, harboring and shielding illegal aliens. If Gary and I and Wynn were to do that, we could be facing 10 years in prison. So what we have to do is go through basically contacting the Attorney General's office, and to my understanding, the arrest would have to be made by the DOJ, the FBI, and maybe the custody could be the sheriff probably could take him into custody, but the real deal is the laws he's broken. And that's what I think is part of this. I mean, it's two different issues, and we'll talk more about the issue of what laws Newsom broke, what the consequences legally would be. And when I mean legally, I don't mean suing him. I mean bringing charges, those kinds of things. But this particular conversation is basically about our constitutional rights and the right to be represented. And that's what the CFR case was about. It was representing all Californians.
Right. And along with that, then now that Judge Mueller's been identified as a partisan hack in one of the comments,
yep.
So now what? What avenue is open to us? What do we do next? What's the next step?
And that's what we brought Gary on to talk about, but we're going to have to go off to a break. So, Gary, we're going to go off to a break, and then we'd like you to talk about our next move and what you guys are thinking and how this can basically expose the – well, the violation of Article 3, Section 1 of the United States Constitution.
Oh.
Don't judges have to serve at good behavior?
With good behavior.
Good behavior, capital B, right?
And bold.
Capital B.
And it's in bold in the text.
Yes.
And that means something. The word actually means something.
It does.
Yep.
So, Gary, my good friend, when we come back from the break, if you could talk about that and what our next move is, that'd be great.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
I was 18, didn't have a care, working for peanuts, not a dime to spare. But I was leaning solid everywhere, like a rock. My hands were steady, my eyes were clear and bright. My walk had purpose, my steps were quick and light, and I held firm to what I felt was right, like a rock.
Dr. Farrell in Palisadro is now making dental work more affordable by offering a Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership. The Dental Discount Savings Plan is simple, straightforward, and includes 20% off all treatment, such as emergency limited exams, restorative work, fillings, crowns, partials, bridges, dentures, and periodontal treatment, a comprehensive exam, oral cancer screening, a TMJ exam, a periodic exam, and two sets of x-rays, along with cleaning and two fluoride treatments. The program is a discount plan, not a dental insurance plan, and is only available at the office of Dr. Farrell. The Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership provides immediate eligibility. No yearly maximum, no deductibles, no claims to submit, no limitations for pre-existing treatment, and no waiting periods. Children on the plan must be 15 years or younger. Some restrictions apply. Membership prices may vary. Contact Dr. Farrell, located at 9461 Deschutes Road, Suite 2 in Palisadro. Call 547-57 to make an appointment today. That's 547-5757.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency childcare, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
We're back.
We are back. Happy Specimen made a very clever comment. You want to give that comment, Wynn?
Oh, gosh. You always do this.
Yeah.
Oh, when they're talking about the list of grievances, or not grievances, but offenses that Governor Newsom has done to us. He said a shorter list would of what laws haven't been broken. And that's true. It'd probably be a shorter list of laws that haven't been broken.
How do you get your names on the chat room, Ashley? This guy's, or gal, or whoever's.
Unless you sign in, so you have your name and your profile picture like I do on mine,
yeah.
Then it'll automatically randomly assign them. So if you notice, the at is at guest 1807, yeah. Whatever.
Those are made-up names.
They're made-up names.
Who makes up the names?
It's pulled from a list from our host, our website host. They have a list of just random.
Well, was Happy Specimen the one that made it through?
Specimen was that one. There's also Calm Human, Cautious Earthling,
yep.
Kind Citizen.
My gosh.
There are a bunch of them. Yes.
Hey, guys, print your own names.
We want to see your creativity.
Yeah. Anyway, getting back to our guest, Gary. Where were we?
I'd like to back up for a second.
Yes.
Back to the
yes.
immigration.
Yes.
the federal government's been even worse than Newsom, and there's a case called Plyler versus Doe. It's a 1982 decision that opened the floodgates on illegal immigration. One of the problems is it was a 5-4 decision. We get too many 5-4 decisions out of the Supreme Court. And when we get those are just political decisions. They continually take the rule of law away from us. And people look at these 5-4 decisions and they say, if the court doesn't even know what the law is, how can the people know what it is? But these decisions have opened the floodgates and allowed sanctuary cities, sanctuary counties, sanctuary states. And we've had decades of dereliction of duty by the federal government and many state officials, followed by decades of dereliction of duty, and we're getting to the point of dystopia. And they're not representing us, they're not doing their duty, and they're not solving our problems. Now, back to the case. Judge Mueller dismissed our second amended complaint back in, let's see when that was, August of 2018, and she said that we didn't have standing to bring the case, that we didn't allege a specific injury, and instead we alleged a generalized grievance, and therefore we didn't have standing. And so our case, again, never got out of the starting blocks, and we were never able to put on our proof and our case. Then on May 15, 2020, the Ninth Circuit affirmed her dismissal, finding again that we didn't have standing and that we presented a political question that doesn't get to be resolved. And that was a 3-0 decision. It was non-published, and that's an opinion that should be published so the people can see it. And again, this representation is the key issue to solving so many of our problems.
Now, but keep in mind, Gary, explain the non-published component, because people may not understand that. They'll think it's just an oral thing, but it's actually published, but it's not for public release. Is that correct?
Correct. It doesn't go into the law books as a published opinion.
And so therefore, we can't rebut it. We can't rebut it, anything that they say or did, correct?
Well, you can somewhat.
Or appeal.
More so in the federal system, you can cite non-published cases where in California you can't. But the other thing is they denied us oral argument. And
right.
You see more and more that the government is short-shifting our rights. I tell people all the time, you think you got rights? Go try and use them.
Well, and the thing is, we never even got to go to the courthouse. We never got a day in court. We never got to go to the bench to just be in the presence of the judges. We never even got that far. So that's
right,
the whole thing people have to understand, is that we didn't even get that far.
And we have a procedure now that we've been discussing, and you want to explain what our next move is, my friend?
Yes. So we're going to continue the case, and we're taking a cert petition to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, one of the problems there is the court hears only, the high court hears only about 80 cases every year. In fact, it's gone down from the number of cases they used to hear, and yet they have more and more cases go up, again, essentially denying people hearings. And so we've decided to go forward with this. Our chances of succeeding are through the procedural system very slim. We think on the merits, this is the case. In fact, there's a program on Fox News called The Next Revolution with Steve Hilton. We've tried to get on that program. I spent considerable time myself speaking with his booker, and we never got on there. And what we were attempting to tell them is that the CFR case, Citizens for Fair Representation, is the next revolution, and it's to get us back to our founding principle of organic representation with these proper ratios. California is among the worst of all 50 states in representation. And California, you know, presents itself as this vanguard state, that it's out in front and it's trendy about everything. But no one in this state, in the political system, and that includes both parties, is talking about increasing the representation of the people. and it afflicts the northern counties more, but it afflicts every citizen of this state. There's just too many people and too few representatives, so you don't have a voice at the table, and your voice doesn't get heard.
Yeah, you know, and they probably should call it, what is it, Steve Hilton's Revolution? Is that what they call it?
The next revolution.
They should call it the next restoration, because actually we're trying to restore what we already have.
What we used to have. Yeah.
And that's
taken it away from us.
They've taken all of it away from us. And what the courts did, one comment that you made that I thought was amazing in court, and that was when the judge had made the comment that, or you had made the comment, Your Honor, you gave us the three-judge court, and then you rescinded that. And she gulped and she swallowed and she said, well, that's because I basically was advised to do that. I got some advice about things I didn't know. That's basically what's her excuse. And you made the comment that, well, Your Honor, we can't find that anywhere in the record. I mean, I thought to me that was just, that was a very quiet moment in that courtroom.
Meaning that, so people understand, meaning it couldn't find it in the record, meaning it's never happened in the country. In any court.
We researched all the cases and never found a case where the court granted the three-judge panel and then it was pulled back. And so we thought some shenanigans went on there. You mentioned earlier Article 3, Section 1, about judges serve under good behavior. Well, the problem is there's no such thing as bad behavior. And I've studied this repeatedly, and I was shocked to find out how few impeachments there were. But Thomas Jefferson said early on that each impeachment's but a mere scarecrow. It really doesn't work. And I think there's only been about 18 total impeachments of the federal judges in our 200 and some 30 years history. That's shows you that there's literally no accountability.
Well, you hit the nail on the head when you talked about judicial immunity. I mean, they can get away with whatever they want. I saw a complete series of judges speaking that the Constitution means what I says it means in my courtroom.
Right.
Basically all this stuff. That's Chrisanne Hall, I think, that put that video up.
Yeah.
And just all these judges that were filmed just saying, hey, you know, the law is what I say the law is when you're in my courtroom. I mean...
Well, you're so right there, and I'll read a quote here from a book called The Supreme Court, From Taft to Warren. It's 1958. And in the foreword of the book, it has, with disarming candor, Justice John Marshall Harlan, grandfather of present Chief Justice Harlan, told a class of law students, I want to say to you, young gentlemen, that if we don't like an act of Congress, we don't have much trouble to find grounds for declaring it unconstitutional. And so when you add in judicial immunity, and another real problem with the federal system is, guess where judicial misconduct complaints go?
Uh-oh, where?
Well, each of the circuits has a judicial council, so they go to other judges.
So that's a fox keeping track of the hen house there.
Yeah.
Oh my
and
gosh.
In fact, Justice Kaczynski wrote a really good dissent in this one complaint about, we had a really bad boy judge here in Los Angeles called Manuel Real, and he had committed misconduct repeatedly, and they never... called him to task. At one time, they called him to D.C. We thought something was going to happen, that they were going to impeach him, but then he got away with that. But this dissent that Justice Kaczynski wrote, it was the third time the complaint was dismissed, and they caught him acting without legal authority and intervening in a case. And Justice Kaczynski wrote... you know, we have this special duty, and they're going to take it away from us if we don't do our job. These are our colleagues, and so in a way he's admitting that they have a conflict of interest to begin with. But he said, when we continue to treat our own so much better than everyone else, they'll take it away from us. And I wrote a paper on that, and I put in there, bingo, that's the problem, that they have a conflict.
Wow.
You know, we're going to have to go off to a break here pretty quick, but... when we get back, I would like you to explain what a cert petition is and what exactly that is for the folks. But we do have some news that we know that Happy Specimen grew up and she became George. I know you're laughing right now, Happy Specimen.
All right.
Anyway, as we go, time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference before, during, and after disasters such as hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, or wildfires. So when disaster strikes, you want to be prepared to protect them. Be sure to microchip or tag your pets. Never leave them behind in a major crisis, and be sure to have an emergency kit ready in your home at all times with a pet crate or carrier, leash, blanket, ID, and medications, their water bowl, and 7 to 10 days worth of food. To find out how to protect your entire family during a disaster and help our best friends in their worst times, please visit AmericanHumane.org.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
This podcast is for storytellers of all kinds. We discuss everything from the hero's journey to how to slog through that pesky middle section of your book. From filling out your author's toolbox to answering your questions about the craft and the industry. From magic to mayhem.
Our August series is called Diagnosis Writer. Each episode, we're taking a close look at identifying common but difficult problems and pinning down their solutions. September spotlights designing interesting characters with interesting skill sets.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
In some old dusty attic undisturbed for many years, there lies a tattered banner that is stained with blood and tears by men who knew that freedom must be fought for by the free and died to save a ragged flag that says, don't tread on me, don't tread on me. I'm a rat with diamonds on my back. And other men retreat, that's just the time that I attack. Because a dream that's worth defending is a dream that's bound to be a ragged flag that says, don't tread on me.
Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me.
We got a future, man.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Just like we have a face for radio.
We do. We have the mugs for radio.
Yes, but Ashley writes selfishly.
She does.
Absolutely. That is my life motto.
Gary, my good friend, could you let the folks know what a cert petition is? A cert petition.
Okay. Yeah, that's a writ of certiorari, which is a discretionary route to the Supreme Court. And as opposed to if we would have gotten a three-judge panel, our case would have, any time during the proceeding after we got the three-judge panel, if we had an issue of some merit, we could take it directly to the Supreme Court, and they would have to hear it. When it's discretionary, again, as I mentioned earlier, there's over 4,000 cases that are cert petitioned kind of to the Supreme Court, and they only grant about 80 of them a year. And so, again, our rights are being short-shrifted. One other thing I'd like to add is that if anybody's interested in this topic, and you should be, because your liberty and how the government works and voting, these are all participatory activities. You have to get off your apathy and get involved. And two things to look at would be to go to our website, at staffneylaw.com. You can get on that website and view the whole docket of the case. You could also go to 30,000.org. They have tremendous research and information. And then there, and in fact, on 30,000.org, you'll find a law review article there called "The Role of Electoral Accountability in the Madisonian Machine." It's by a guy by the name of Christopher Straw, a lawyer, and I think it was a 2008 article. And let me just read you the foreword or abstract, and it'll kind of sum up the issue that we're talking about. And it starts, in the Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton and James Madison laid out their arguments for why the American people need not fear a tyrannical federal government. Chief amongst their arguments was the system of checks and balances which would keep the proposed government loyal and responsive to the people. As some commentators have noted, their theory appears to have failed. In this article, I argue that this failure was not a foregone conclusion, and that, in fact, American history until the early 20th century presented a continual progression towards the political ideal put forth by Madison. The root cause underlying the present failure of the Madisonian system of checks and balances lies not, as some commentators have suggested, with the rise of political parties, but with the fixing of the House of Representatives at 435 members. And so what's happened there is when you cap the legislature, you're cutting off the power of the people, and then the power is given to the government. And one of the main features of our Constitution was to diffuse power and to keep power in the hands of the people. And government, anybody that works for government is supposed to be our agent. We're the principal, we're the sovereign, and government's our agent and servant. But they are ignoring us time and time again.
You know, it's pretty simple, and Gary's laid this out, and this won't be the last time we have you on, my good friend, that's for sure. But the real deal is, without representation, nothing else matters. If we don't have a representative form of government, nothing else matters. Number two, the Second Amendment. If we don't have the Second Amendment to protect our God-given rights, protect our First Amendment, all the rest of it, then we're up a creek. And number three, when we do elect these people, the apportionment, as Gary's been talking about all morning, the apportionment has to be something to where they're not only beholden to us, but they adequately can do their job, that they adequately can talk to their constituents and do what they're supposed to do, and that they are in a position to where if we don't want them in, we can vote them out, and they have to be also accountable to their oath of office, the Constitution of the said state they're in, the Constitution of the United States, and they have to be subject to all the laws that we as citizens are subject to. And those points are the silver bullet. If we stay with those three things, that gets it done. But Gary has hit the nail on the head. Without representation, forget the rest of it, because the government takes over. Is that correct, Gary?
And another part of that, too, is that they have
to be
accessible.
Over, and meaning that they get more power, we get smaller. And just like representation is like the blood of government, publicity is the same to hearing our case. And if we don't have publicity on our case, it won't get heard. And we've tried and tried and tried, and we're still trying. And, you know, we want to get this to resonate with the people, to wake them up so they see what's happening. And the news media is not doing its job in that regard. And one thing President Trump is really spot on is about the fake news. The news does not, like the government, represent us a lot of the times.
And we'll be having a new website, and Wynn's going to talk a little bit about the situation, Gary, which you're very familiar with. So shoot away, my brother.
Okay, yeah. We're forced to move on to a new website. We were going to try to update our website with our current domain names, but we have to change that because we entrusted someone a couple years ago to manage and to be the steward of our domains. Well, that person has gone off the rails and is holding them hostage and has been holding them hostage for over a year. They've been communicated with by us, the Jefferson group and by the attorneys, and they have ignored every communication, every single one. Never responded saying, hey, I got it, or anything. They've received certified letters in the mail. They've received emails. They've received notes of copies of this information left at their front door and in their car windshield wiper on their property as of yesterday. No communications whatsoever. So I just want everybody to know and to understand what we've been up against for the past over a year. It's been over a year. It's been about 15 months, I believe. And we have been working on this, trying to come to a decision on what's going to happen without screwing up our website. But we're going to have to move on to a new website, new domain names, and everything else. So I just want everybody to be prepared. Gary's been instrumental in helping us with this legally, writing the letters and so forth. And want everybody else to know, too, the individual is local out of Shasta County, out of Redding specifically. And this individual is also involved with one of the political groups here locally who is running their website. So they really need to pay attention to what's going on as well, because at some point, this jackwagon is going to hold them hostage as well. So I want everybody to understand what's really going on and why we've been quiet as far as what we've been putting on the websites. We've been very careful because we didn't know what was going to be hijacked with 100% certainty. We have been very careful about that because we don't want to screw it up. But for whatever reason, this individual has gone completely off the rails. And I just wanted everybody to understand that and to know what's going on and to hear it straight from us and not in the rumor mill. So you're hearing it from us. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer. And, Gary, thank you for all your help in helping us to try to get to a resolution on this. And, you know, it's one of the many fights that we have with, you know, moving forward.
Any comments on what Wynn said, Gary?
No. People don't do the right thing a lot of times, and they cause a lot of problems for people, and that's why, then you have to resort to government. If people were angels, we wouldn't need government, and you're going to have a government, but you've got to ride herd over it, or it'll ride herd over you.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, again, the position of representation, that court case was for everybody, but before we go, we've got about 3 minutes. I'd like you to explain why that three-judge court was vitally important to us.
Well, one, we would have gotten to put on our case. Number two, we could go directly to the Supreme Court then on an issue. And this issue is always going to end up in the hands of the Supreme Court, and it would be better sooner rather than later. And one of the things that's happening now, our courts are fiddling as the country is burning. The courts have taken over so much of the battlefield, really. And that's happened due to the lack of representation. Everything ends up in the courts, and the courts are the ones that have made all these rulings that has let our country slip through our fingers. They're not being the safeguards of the Constitution and our rights.
Yeah, and you know that's the thing. The idea of any kind of appellate process going directly to the Supreme Court was really key to us. And here's the thing to really understand, folks. As Gary said, we couldn't find this on the record anywhere. And so if this wasn't important, if this wasn't vital to stop a mechanism, to stop an agenda by the maybe even the deep state.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't to stop an agenda by the deep state or the political arm of our government, why would she rescind? Why would she rescind that? I remember getting the phone call. I was sitting by my pool with my wife and some friends, and we were all sitting there, and we got the phone call from Mark Baird that she had requested a three-judge court. Then, what was it, Gary? A week later, she changes her mind. No one's ever done that. Why would they do that? If this case wasn't important and representation wasn't vital to your liberty and restoring your liberty, then why would she have ever done that?
Yep.
Well, also that there was a 2015 unanimous decision called Shapiro versus McMahon Justice Scalia that limited the discretion of both the trial judge and then the chief judge. The trial judge has to just determine whether or not the case is frivolous. And we got on record that both our trial judge, Judge Mueller, and our opposition, the Secretary of State through his counsel, they both said the case was not frivolous. So she found that we were entitled to a three-judge panel. Then the chief judge, all his duties are limited to is simply picking the other two judges. And we found out, and we put it, and we got it on the record through admissions from Judge Mueller explaining herself that she thought this was a three-judge court case. That's why she had picked it. And then there were some discussions with the chief judge and or his attorneys that work there.
Wow.
And we believe that was improper. We took a writ of mandate to the Supreme Court, and that was, again, discretionary. If we had the three-judge court,
wow,
we wouldn't have need to have brought that. But it was discretionary, and
right,
we got two words back, petition denied.
Yeah, yep. We've got to leave it there. And, Gary, amazing.
Thank you.